I'll post this these maple commands on the aftermath. So if you want to play around with them yourself, you can. Questions about anything from last time? Yeah, so here's those commands I was running. The Bessel function of order 0 is part of maple, Bessel j 0 comma x. And I solved for the second root there between 5 and 6. So you remember I plotted the Bessel function. It wiggles. And I wanted that 0 between 5 and 6, so I numerically calculated it and got it there. And, so this is going to turn out to be one of the solutions to the vibrating circular drum problem that I was working on. And let's see what, I'll do the animation now. This is the zeroth order Bessel one. And so I just wrote out the formula I'm going to get for the solution. And it's going to look like that. Interesting about this one, the one before this would be the one that just goes up and down like a big membrane. That would be the pitch of the circular drum. But you know, they make drums, kettle drums, with a big volume of air underneath it, like a timpani. And that means that all the frequencies that are allowed have to preserve the volume. So you notice that this pokes up at the same time the other side pokes down, and it keeps the volume of air in the kettle drum constant. So this would be an allowed vibration. The one that's not allowed is the fundamental pitch that would, if you didn't have the kettle of air underneath, the biggest solution would be the one that just bulged up like a big bulge and then bulged down. But the volume doesn't get preserved that way. It would pump the volume up and down. That would get cut out if you put a kettle underneath your circular membrane. So only the modes of oscillation which preserve the volume with time. And it turns out these do. So as much volume is popping up or down as comes out the other side to preserve the volume of the kettle drum. So the point of this is that, you know, I told you that these functions are just as concrete as the exponential and sines and cosines, and they're very easy to use for computations. A higher order one is going to allow for some different symmetries. So this is a higher order one that we're going to cook up soon. It's kind of better, even more fun to look at it. But this is another one of these things that keeps the volume constant. So when these two bulge up, the other two bulge down, and the volume of the kettle drum would be held constant. So that vibration wouldn't be cut out by having a kettle underneath your circular drum head. And funny, if you ever watch timpani players, they're very careful about where they whack the timpani. Because they don't want to cut out certain of these modes that are... that give you a good sound. So they're sensitive to where they hit it because they want to keep the good harmonics and maybe cut out some of the bad ones. It's not going to be it'll have a pitch, but it won't be a terribly musical sound like you get from a saxophone or a clarinet. But it's an interesting sound. And part of the reason it sounds nice is because of the volume of air underneath it. That's how you can tune it. It's too hard to tune just a circular membrane. If you just whack it, it's going to sound like a thud. But having the volume of air underneath makes it possible to tune by adjusting the volume of the air. Any questions about maple before I kill this? Okay, so last time I was working on solving the vibrating drum head problem. So remember when I separated variables, I got a differential equation. The R problem was R double prime over R plus 1 over R, R prime over R equals lambda. And I did the lambda equals 0 case last time and found no non-zero solutions. So last time, the lambda equals 0 case was an Euler equation, which I could solve explicitly, and I could get no non-zero solutions to my boundary problem. So let's see, the boundary problem was that R of 1 needs to be 0. That means that the drum is pinned down on the boundary. Okay, and I'm not going to do this case, but the lambda positive case also has no solutions. And this has to do with the wiggling. So the lambda, that last case, which is going to allow for solutions, that's the case where we get Bessel functions that wiggle. And wiggling is important. These, you can check that these solutions don't wiggle. So you know, it'll like hyperbolic sine. If it's zero, it's zero. Then once it starts going, it keeps going and never comes back down. So that was one. That's how we could see that these things didn't have any non-zero solutions. If you pin one side down, there's no wiggling that lets you come down and get back down to zero for the other side. Something similar happens here. It's a little trickier to work out, but it's true. So the case I wanted to do today is the Bessel function case. So that's the case lambda less than zero. Then, let's see, the equation you get, let's write lambda equal minus k squared. That's a negative thing. Then the differential equation we get is r squared r double prime plus r times r prime plus k squared r equals zero. That's a type of Bessel's equation. And let's see, let's be also subject to the boundary condition r of 1 equals zero. It's not in the standard form of a Bessel's equation. You can do a simple change of variables to put it in a better form. Let's change variables to clean this up and put it in standard form. Let's let S equals K times R. So when you write in the new variables S, it's just chain rule when you do this. When you do the chain rule, you get a new equation, S squared D2R over DS squared plus S DR DS plus S squared R, notice the K goes away, equals zero. That's a Bessel's equation of order zero, famous equation. And it's one of these equations that's well understood and solved. What's interesting about this, notice that my leading coefficient vanishes at S equals zero. That means S equals zero is a nasty little spot. But it turns out that it's a nasty spot, but not too nasty. So note, the ODE is singular at S equals zero. But it's not too singular. It's called a regular singular point there. It has what's called a regular. That's a special kind of singular point. I don't think I'll define regular singular point, but there's a good reason regular singular points come up often in engineering. This is polar coordinates near the origin. And when you do polar coordinates near the origin and play these games, you get a type of singularity at the origin, which is singular, but it's controlled singular. So it has something to do with polar coordinates, that this singular point is not as horrific as it could be. Basically, a regular singular point looks like S squared there and S there. That's how you can tell if you've got one. And then who cares what over on the other part? That's a regular singular point. Yeah, so whenever you've got an S squared here and an S here, that's a regular singular point. And they come up a lot in practice. I think I'll change my S to an X and my R to a Y now to solve this. So here, this is called the method of Frobenius that I'm going to demonstrate on how you go about solving this kind of equation. Okay, so I'm going to change my letters here to X squared Y double prime plus XY prime plus X squared Y equals zero. This looks like an Euler equation, except for this annoying X squared here. If this was just a number, then this would be an Euler equation, and it would be easy for us to solve with X to a power. So Frobenius realized, well, this part's an Euler, and this is like a perturbation of an Euler equation, putting an X squared there. If you're going to perturb an Euler equation, maybe the solution would be a perturbation of the solution. So Frobenius got the big idea, is to try a solution of the form. Let's see, if this were Euler, if this were an Euler equation, remember we would try y equals x to a power. The method of Frobenius, this is a perturbed Euler equation. We try y equals x to a power times a power series. And jam it in and try to make it work. Okay, so that's what y is. Now y prime would be, let's see, I'd have to use product rule. P times x to the p minus 1 times the power series. And let's see, y double prime, plus x to the p times the derivative of the power series. The derivative of the power series would be the sum as n goes from 1 to infinity, n a n x to the n minus 1. And I got to do y double prime. Y double prime would be p times p minus 1 x to the p minus 2 times the power series. Then I'd get the derivative of x to the p times the derivative of the power series times 2. So that would be 2 p times x to the p minus 1 times the derivative of the power series. And then finally plus x to the p times the second derivative of the power series. And the second derivative is the sum from 2 to infinity, n times n minus 1, a n x to the n minus 2. Okay, this looks horrific. But now I'm going to plug this into the differential equation and mess with it. So let's see, I've got to multiply this one by x squared, multiply that one by x, multiply that one by x squared and add them up. A neat thing that happens here, when I multiply this one by x squared, it's going to raise that power by 2. And I'm going to get x to the p in all the places, which is fantastic. And look at, when I multiply this one by x squared, I'll put one of the powers in there to raise that one by a degree, and I'll slide the other one inside the sum and raise that one back up to x to the n. So it looks like it's going to be a big mess, but actually when I put them in, the regular singular point is exactly what I need to make these terms all look beautiful and combined. So I guess I have to do it now. So let's see, I'm going to multiply this one by x squared. I'm going to multiply this one by x. And the first one, I'm going to multiply by x squared. And add them all up. Okay, what do I get when I do that? Okay, so the first, I get p times p minus 1 times x to the p times the power series from 0 to infinity. Okay, that raised that power back up. Now I'm going to raise this one. I'm going to slide one power in there and one power in the sum. And so that'll give me oops. 2px to the p, that brings that back up. And then when I have my derivative here, I get nan, and it would raise this back up to x to the n. I like that. And finally, let's see, this is the y double prime term. X to the p, sum from 2 to infinity, n minus 1, an, x to the n. That's fantastic. That goes back up to power n when I put my square in right there and raise it. Okay. Okay, that's the y double prime term. And now for the x times y term. I got to look at my x times y term. There it is. P times x to the p minus 1 would become a p times x to the p times my power series. And then this other term, when I multiply by x, would bring that power back up to x to the n. And notice I've got x to the p's in front of everything. That's a good thing. X to the p. Sum from 1 to infinity. NaN. Now this becomes an x to the n. Okay, and the last term would be, this is the y term. X squared y would make this a sum from 2... a sum from 0 to infinity, a n x to the n plus 2. And I can shift indices in this one so that they're easy to combine. This one would become an x to the p sum from 2 to infinity, a n minus 2, x to the n. And now you'll notice I can jam all these under one big hairy sum, because all the xn's match, and that's fantastic. The annoying thing is my sums are starting from different spots, and I'm going to look at my zeroth order ones first. So now I'm going to collect this mess under one horrific sum. It looks like it's a frightening thing to do, but it's not going to be so bad. So I'm going to collect the stragglers. Collect the n equals 0 terms. When I do that, there's only what? Where are they? I only see two of them. There's one right up there, and there's one right here. And it turns out that term is critical. So let's see, when I collect my n equals 0 terms, I'm going to get p times p minus 1 plus p times x to the p a naught. That's the two zeroth order terms, one here and one up there. And all the rest of the terms are going to be higher order terms. And this is what Frobenius realized. There's no hope in making this method work unless this is equal to zero. Must be zero. That happens the same time every time you do this method. This is called the indicial equation. The indicial equation. That tells you what the p power has to be. P times p minus 1 in this case plus p has to be equal to 0. And of course that's p squared minus p plus p. So this is kind of a weird case. The method of Frobenius, you're expecting to get two p's here. And this is one of those singular points where, darn it, you only get one p. But maybe it's a good thing for us. I'll explain why it's a good thing for us in a minute. So we usually get two p's when everything goes smoothly. And you get two linearly independent solutions. But in this case, we only get one. We only get one, namely p equals 0. And interesting, that means that x to the p is just 1. That means a regular power series solves this problem. Okay, so we conclude we can get y equals x to the 0. Sum as n goes from 0 to infinity, a n x to the n. That's a regular power series. So I didn't have to do this method of Frobenius. I could have just plugged in a power series and got it. But this works in more generality. So now rather than have all those p's in there floating around, I guess I'll rewrite it. It's simpler to write. I've got y is a sum from 0 to infinity, a n x to the n. Y prime is the sum from 1 to infinity, n a n x to the n, minus 1. Y double prime is the sum from 2 to infinity, n times n minus 1, a n x to the n minus 2. And now I'm going to multiply by x squared, x, and x squared, and add them up. So this is easier without all the annoying p's. And then I get something that's nice to look at. I get a sum from 2 to infinity, n times n minus 1, a n. And that x squared brings this power back up to n. I like that. And then when I do it to the derivative, I'd get n a n, and it brings that power back up to n. That top one's annoying. It's going to be the sum from 0 to infinity, a n x to the n plus 2. And I'm going to want to shove that in here and collect all the terms. I need to shift indices for that. That's equal to the sum from 2 to infinity, a n minus 2 x to the n. And so I can plug that here and have plus the sum from 2 to infinity a n minus 2 x to the n. Now I've got x to the n in all the spots and I can collect them and set them equal to 0. But notice my sums start in different spots. These start from 2 and this starts from 1. So there's one straggler term there. Before I can jam everything under one sum, I have a straggler term here. N equal 1 straggler. So before I can jam everything under one sum and collect terms, I need to pull out that straggler all by itself. That straggler term is just 1 times A1. Times x to the 1 power. That's the straggler. But now I've got everything start going from 2 to infinity, and I can jam them under one sum. N going from 2 to infinity, and everything left is n times n minus 1 plus n times an. Let's see, I've got n times n minus 1 plus n. Times an, that's the first two terms combined, plus a sub n minus 2 times x to the n. These are just numbers. This is a power series, and this power series needs to be add up and be equal to 0. And so this is the function f, which is identically 0, and Taylor's formula tells me that these coefficients, by Taylor's formula, would be the nth derivative of f at 0 divided by n factorial. And of course, those are identically 0, because the function on the right is identically 0. So I need all those coefficients to be 0 if this is going to work. I also need a1 to be equal to 0. Okay, when I set those coefficients together as 0, I get something called the recursion formula. And it's going to be a very easy recursion formula to deal with. The recursion formula, let's see, when I set it equal to 0, I get an has to be equal to minus an minus 2. Let's see, this would be n squared minus n plus n over n squared. Nice and clean. So after all that gory writing and getting the initial equation, it boils down to something this simple. That's the recursion formula. And let's see, this would be for n being 2 and up. N equals 2, 3, 4, etc. And so a naught is the value at 0. I have no... My y at 0 is a naught. I can't pin it down. And I have a1 is equal to 0. That's my straggler term. But now my recursion formula spits out what all the other numbers have to be. So, the first one is the n equal 2 case. That tells me that a2 is minus a naught over 2 squared. And my n equal 3 case would say that a3 equals minus a1 over 3 squared. But a1 is 0. So all the odd terms are going to be 0, as we'll see. All the odd terms are going to be 0 from this point on. N equal 4 case would tell me a4 is minus a2 over 4 squared. And I already know what a2 is, so I'll put it down here. And that'll give me, let's see, minus a minus would give me a plus a naught over 4 squared times 2 squared. Okay, A5 is going to be 0. A5 is minus A3 over 5 squared. And A3 was 0, so that's going to be a big fat 0. I won't write any more odd terms. And let's see, N equals 6. Is a6 would be minus a4 over 6 squared. That would be minus a naught over 6 squared times 4 squared times 2 squared. Okay, this is 2 times 1, 2 times 2, 2 times 3. That's a lot of 2s and a lot of... Let's see, let me think about this a little bit more. Well, let's do A8. A8 would be A0 over 8 squared times 6 squared times 4 squared times 2 squared. That's equal to A0 over 2 times, let's see, this would be 2 times 4 squared times 2 times 3 squared times 2 times 2 squared times 2 times 1 squared.
So I've got 1, 2, 3, 4 squared. That's 4 factorial squared. And then I get 2, 4, 6, 8 powers of 2.
So I claim this is equal to A0 over 2 to the 8th times 4 factorial squared.
These terms are going to zero really fast.
So let's see, I'm spitting out the even numbers. This is, I claim what I get here is that a to the 2n, a sub 2n is a naught. See, I get a minus 1 to the n times a naught over 2 to the n, no, 2 to the 2n. Times n factorial squared.
That's what I claim I get after I stare at this for a few days or minutes. Depending how good you get at this. First time you do it, it takes a while to see a pattern, but you get good at it real quick. You can prove it by induction and the recursion formula.
So what I claim, my Bessel function of order 0 which I'll call J0 of S. Well, let's see. It's a J of X at the moment. J of X is the A naught I might as well take to be 1. Let's see. It'd be the sum as N goes from why don't I write it like this? My A naught, my A1 term, that was 1, and then I had a minus x squared over forget what it was, sorry. I gotta look at my list here. 2 squared. Oh yeah, okay, now I remember. Two squared plus x to the fourth over 4 squared times 2 squared plus x to the sixth over 6 squared times 4 squared times 2 squared minus, let's see, this would be minus plus dot dot dot. That pattern's really clear. But I could write it like this, a naught times the sum as n goes from 0 to infinity x to the 2n times minus 1 to the n over 2 to the 2n n factorial squared.
These things converge a lot faster than exponentials, because I only have every other term. I've got factorials squared, and then I've got this big humongous power of 2 in addition to that. So these converge so fast, you wouldn't believe it.
And to give these things a name, I would take the A naught to be 1.
That gives you the Bessel function of order 0. There it is.
Now remember I showed you that method called reduction of order? So I got only one solution, which is kind of a bummer. This is a Bessel function of order zero, but it's called the method of reduction of order. I can up from one solution, I can always get a second solution. Okay, so I got y1 equals the j of x function. We plug in a y2, which is an unknown function of x times the function I just found. And you plug it into the ODE, and you get a first-order differential equation for u. I'm not going to do it. So you plug it into the ODE. You get a first-order, in fact, a first-order linear. You get a first-order ODE in U to solve. It's not too bad to do. You just do it. But then you find out that, oh, blast, my second solution is going to have a nasty singularity at the origin. Okay, if I had lots of time to kill, I would say just do it. And you find that your second solution is a drum ripper. It blows up at the origin. That drum ripper is another, it's a Bessel function of type 2. And it's a singular one that is a drum ripper. And so you have to toss it. And that means you get one solution to your problem. And now we have to worry about, so we get a solution. Y equals J of X. And now I have to worry about that boundary condition. So let's go back to our original problem. Did I call it J sub 0? That's what I meant to call it. I should call this a Bessel function of order 0. So I only get one solution, J sub 0. After I take the a naught equal to 1. And my second solution would be that. And it's a drum ripper, so I only get the one solution, the Bessel function of order 0. Now let's go back to what I was doing. Back to my R and R. My solution then is R of R equals, or remember, my solution, I change variables to S. My R of S is my J0 of S. And remember, my S was K times R. So finally, I get back to my solution that I really want, and that's my R of R is the zeroth order Bessel function times kr. And remember, here's my Bessel function. It wiggles. I graphed it using Maple. I don't care what it does for negative. My Bessel functions look like this. They wiggle, and they decay. In fact, they decay rapidly. And it turns out these zeros of the Bessel functions are going to be important. Let's call these zeros alpha 1, alpha 2, alpha 3, alpha 4. That's a tradition. And this is the zeroth order Bessel function of S. So this direction is the S direction. So see, what I need to do is slide my K
so that these are the zeros of the Bessel function. So I need to make my k, so let's see, if I had my first k would be alpha 1, that would make the zero occur like when I was messing around with the vibrating string problem. That would slide that zero in and make it happen at 1.
So if I need, r of 1, that would be the Bessel function of order 0 at k times 1 equals 0.
I need these k's to be the zeros of the Bessel function.
So I get solutions, non-zero solutions, when k is a zero of the Bessel function. So k can be alpha 1, alpha 2, alpha 3, etc.
So the zeros of the Bessel functions are important. And they pop out in this problem right here. And they're just like the zeros of sine. And you can figure out what the Bessel zeros, they have an asymptotic behavior. And you can figure out what it is, not too hard.
Okay, so I found a whole bunch of solutions to this problem. Now I can go back to the T problem. The T problem is easy. So let's go back to the T problem. By the way, these are going to be the frequencies of the oscillations. So my T problem was T double prime minus lambda t equals 0. But remember, my lambda is minus k squared. So it's t double prime plus k squared t equals 0. I get, for each n, I get my tn of t is an cosine kt. Let's see. My k is alpha n, where alpha n are zeros of the Bessel function. And so I get alpha n, I'll call it kt for them, yeah. Alpha nt plus bn sine alpha nt. And so these are the solutions I was graphing using Maple. My urt is going to be a sum as n goes from 1 to infinity of an Bessel function of order 0 anr cosine alpha t nt. That's the
these are the frequencies you would hear if you whack the drum.
Plus bn Bessel function of order 0, alpha n r, sine alpha n t.
And let's see, the last thing you do is you want to mess around with the initial condition. If I were to stick in time equals 0, this cosine terms would be 1 and the sine terms would be 0.
And so the initial conditions, we'd want to expand, let's see, the sum as n goes from 1 to infinity. That would be u at r at time 0 would be sums of Bessel functions.
And if I take the derivative at time 0, that would involve the sine functions.
So let's see, du dt of u at time at r and time 0.
The derivative of cosine would be sine. All those terms would be 0.
And I'd be wanting to expand this as a sum from 1 to infinity. It would involve, let's see, the an coefficients. It would involve the bn coefficients. Alpha n bn times these Bessel functions. And let's see, if I had, remember I was making these depend only on the radius and not on theta. So this would be a function of r given, and this would be a function of r given, that we want that. That's the last thing to deal with.
And guess what? The Bessel functions like this are orthogonal functions. They always turn out to be that way. That's a Sturm-Liouville problem.
So that's from the theory of singular Sturm-Liouville problems. Sturm-Liouville problems. Those functions are orthogonal. So if I call them phi sub n of r, that would be the zeroth order Bessel function like that, are orthogonal over the interval 0, 1, except there's a weight function. So they're orthogonal on 0 less than or equal to r less than or equal to 1 with respect to a weight function r. So what that means is that if I were to inner product phi n with phi m, that would be an integral from 0 to 1, phi n of r times phi m of r, and the weight function would be r dr. That's the weight function, and it goes right there. And the theory of Fourier series would work exactly the same. It just, there'd be this weight function whenever I did an inner product. And it works out fine, and you can expand functions in terms of Bessel functions because they're orthogonal. So, of course, I'm not going to do this. It's just pointing to such a stuff that's been done, and it's important stuff because these things pop up. And it's going to work just like Fourier series. And they actually converge quite rapidly because they're just like sines and cosines. They wiggle. There's a Riemann-Lebesgue lemma. Everything goes through exactly the same. So once the Fourier series are figured out, gobs of problems come out in exactly the same manner because the Sturm-Liouville problems give rise to orthogonal functions. They just get a little bit more and more involved the more you do. Any questions about anything? I guess I had to do this before that semester was over, just so you'd see Bessel functions in a context that's familiar. I'm not done solving the vibrating drumhead problem. By the way, after our class, I Googled vibrating circular membrane, and the Wikipedia article has a bunch of animations that I tried to do. They're kind of fun to look at, so you might do that and look at those animations. They have a bunch of higher order ones, so you can see more patterns when you look at the modes of oscillation. Kind of pretty to look at. Okay, that's enough for today. Everybody got my email about the take-home exam is due this Sunday night before Dead Week, because it's a rule I can't give you exams during Dead Week.
I did have a question about the Stein problem. It like mentions in the statement of the problem that like that thing is a polynomial of degree n.
Yeah.
Do we have to prove that if I use that?
Isn't it clear that it's a polynomial?
Well, it is clear, but like to write down a proof, I think it's like more work than like just looking at it.
Okay. Yeah. You can assume that.
So
I thought it was,
you know, that I had a question on the phone too. Also, so like following the hint, so like Okay, so you expand it in like 48 series. And so it's a polynomial, trigonometric function.